Consumer Focus with Martin Newman.
Hello and welcome to Consumer Focus, bringing you expert advice and opinion on customer service and the Great British High Street. My name is Martin Newman and I've worked in commerce for more than 35 years and I'm dedicated to championing the consumer and helping businesses to develop the best possible strategies for their customers. Today, I'm privileged to be joined by Serena Bhandari, who has Tourette's syndrome. She's here to discuss her in-store experiences and what shops and businesses can do to make the high street more accessible for people with invisible disabilities. In addition to the invisible disabilities that Serena has to deal with, I'm also going to talk a little bit about my daughter Saskia Newman, who for many years was in a wheelchair. She was going to join us today, but unfortunately, she's lost her voice, which is not a great start to doing a podcast. Serena, tell me what you do.
So I'm a master's student at UCL studying a course on science and technology studies, which a lot of people have never really heard of. But in essence, it's the politics, the sociology and sort of a lot of practical stuff to do with science engagement. Yes, all surrounding science.
Sounds fascinating. And what do you plan to do? What are you hoping to do when you go out into the big bad world for a career?
For the past few years, I've been focusing a lot on journalism, doing a lot of work experience this summer as well, and hoping, to enter that field when I graduate.
Great. Well, best of luck with that.
Thank you.
Serena, could you start by explaining what an invisible disability is?
An invisible disability is sort of what it sounds like. It's a disability which isn't immediately apparent when you look at the person. So obviously, even if you just look at the imagery we associate with disability, the disabled sign is like a stick man in a wheelchair. But people with invisible disabilities, you wouldn't obviously know that, despite the fact that they might struggle, they might have additional challenges that other people wouldn't have.
What would you say is the biggest ignorance in the public eye around hidden disabilities? Where does ignorance stem from in the first place, do you think?
So I think there's an acceptable view of disability, and that is this physically disabled person. You can see them, you can see that they're disabled, and you sort of know what adjustments they might need to help them function more like everyone else. Whereas with a hidden disability, the person you're looking at might just look like...
Might look normal.
Yeah, like completely,
like
completely normal with maybe no difficulties. But that doesn't mean they're not, they don't have extra challenges on top of what, other people might face.
The more obvious.
Yeah.
It's interesting you say that, because I know that, one of the things I was going to talk to Saskia about was, what she would say that shop assistants and waiters, what their understanding is of wheelchair users and their needs. And I know that she was going to tell me that most shops and restaurants haven't specifically trained their staff to fully understand all the ways you could enhance the experience of wheelchair users. So I think it depends where you go. I mean, she was, I know she has views on restaurants like Wagamama's, who she feels could do more to ensure that waiters can help accommodate, particularly that the seating in Wagamama's doesn't really lend itself
completely
particularly well to wheelchair users.
It doesn't lend
users,
itself well to Tourette's either at all. Completely awful. Having to share a table when you have Tourette's syndrome can be incredibly embarrassing.
It's really difficult. That's a very interesting and relevant example. So what would you suggest they did then?
I mean, my obvious thoughts are that they should not have shared tables. Who actually wants to sit with strangers, disability or not? Aside from that, there should be options if you couldn't, sit in their very rigid seating plans of just benches and tables. I suppose it's just the way they've set up their brand makes it quite difficult for that adaptations that they might be able to provide.
Yeah, so I think it's a very good point. And I think, at the very least, you would expect them to have maybe a separate seating area, that wasn't joined up to, all those other benches and tables so that people could, in the right circumstances, if you like, people could sit separately.
Exactly. I mean, just thinking about people who haven't got disabilities, you might want to go on a date with your partner, but, you're on a shared seating table. It's not like it's that out of the ordinary. It's not like it would only be needed by people with disabilities. Other people probably want it too.
Might also want to sit separately. That's a very good point. Tourette's in particular, I think it's fair to say, is a hugely misunderstood condition. How does this affect you when you're out and about shopping?
So I think in situations like that, I might be my own worst enemy because, I know that a lot of people don't know what Tourette's is. And I'm always hyper aware of that when I'm out in public. So I'm always a bit like, maybe embarrassed is not the right word, but self-conscious about my tics. Mm. just to explain, tics are sort of involuntary movements or noises that you get when you have Tourette's. It's sort of the main symptom. Obviously, there are other symptoms as well. So yeah, when I'm out shopping or at restaurants, or to be honest, just generally in public, I'm always hyper aware that I'm doing something which might be considered abnormal, which might make people stare, and, you know, no one really wants that extra attention on them, especially not, you know, when you have a condition like
Tourette's. Does that exacerbate it for you then when people become more aware, that makes it worse, does it?
Yeah, I mean, you just feel very much under a microscope.
Yeah.
And then you start thinking about it more, and that in turn makes you tick more.
Right.
And then it can be so stressful that, you know, you want to curl up into a pool and, like, leave. But obviously, you can't because you're in public.
Yeah, got you. What are the, just kind of rolling on from that, what are the kind of typical negative and positive experiences that you have in shops or restaurants?
So, again, mainly it relates to seating at restaurants. I dislike sitting near strangers, or near is fine because obviously, you know, in a restaurant situation, you understand you're not going to be the only people in the room.
Yeah.
But I find that a lot of restaurants have maybe a foot of space between each table.
They're trying to pack too many people in, too many covers in.
Yeah, and so that sort of exacerbates the situation where I'm in public and I know everyone's around me, but it's now not that they're just around me, it's that they're sort of static sitting right next to me.
Yeah.
So obviously that can be quite a negative experience if I would like to go out with a friend and suddenly I'm in the situation where I feel a bit trapped and I'm concerned that the person next to me, because we're sitting next to each other for so long, will notice, and then that will stress me out. Because I suppose at the end of the day, I feel like maybe it's wishful thinking on my part, I feel like no one else, I shouldn't have to explain my condition to other people.
No, absolutely.
So that's always quite a negative experience. And I also find it quite, so I'm trying to be better at this, but I find it quite difficult to open up about my Tourette's to strangers.
Sure.
In a situation where, you know, obviously right now here, I'm here to talk about my Tourette's, this is fine.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm in a shop, to go up to a waitress and say, sorry, excuse me, I have Tourette's and I would like to sit at a more suitable table, I find that, like, mortifying.
Yeah.
So when I'm with my family, they obviously know this, they're able to sort of deal with that situation.
Yeah.
And quite often the staff are very, like, accommodating, and they'll put, if I'm eating with any one other person, they might put us on a table for four or for three, so we have a bit more space, and there tends to be like a buffer seat between us and other people.
Just a thought I'm having while you're explaining that. Is there a charity that represents Tourette's?
Yeah, Tourette's Action.
Tourette's Action.
So yeah, I've done a bit of work with them in the past.
Do they have anything visible? Do they? Because what I was thinking is, you know, you probably know at the moment the prostate cancer charity, which is raising awareness, particularly amongst men, of prostate cancer as an issue, have this sort of symbol of a man. But I was just wondering whether or not you might be able to wear a badge or something that would almost become representative of the fact that you know that you have Tourette's, and would help avoid you having to have the dialogue with somebody, because that makes you feel uncomfortable, but they would recognise it in the right environment, and therefore they would be able to provide you with the assistance or the support. Do you think that might be an option? Not sure.
They do these sort of business cards. Tourette's Action, I think, produce business cards, but even that involves the sort of transactional action of showing them the card. If they had a badge, I'm not entirely sure people would obviously recognise it straight away.
You need to have that awareness, obviously.
And to be honest, I don't know if I'd want people sort of staring, trying to figure out what it meant. But also, I think one of the difficulties with Tourette's is that it's a disorder that affects mainly children. A lot of people, it gets a lot better when you get older. So a lot of the things that charities do are focused on children, and obviously children are often with their parents, so it's less of a, I think it's less of a problem having to, you know, that sort of public interaction.
Yeah, because you've got your parents there to help sort out the situation when you're in a store or a restaurant.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you the same question about, you know, the biggest barrier to wheelchair users in shops and stores. And I know her own perspective as well as my own, having wheeled her around in a wheelchair for a number of years, just to say that she's not in a wheelchair anymore. She had a hip replacement a few years ago. that certainly the majority of stores and restaurants are not entirely accessible for wheelchair users. Mm. So, for example, various stores are yet to be fully accommodating for the physical difficulties the stores face, as many stores are equipped with easy-to-find escalators but then hidden elevators, which makes it quite difficult for wheelchair users to continue their shopping because you can't take a wheelchair up an escalator. And I think that the staff tend not to go out of their way to help those who need to find the lifts for easy access, and at least that's our experience in the past. People with hidden disabilities like Tourette's or autism often experience involuntary movements such as ticking or stimming. First of all, I know you've touched on this already, but can you just tell us again what is it? And second, how could stores maybe educate their staff on how to respond more effectively?
Cool. So a tick is basically an involuntary movement or sound. So you can have vocal or motor tics. And you get like simple tics or complex tics. Yeah. So simple tics could be just like twitching your shoulder or your nose or coughing or grunting, whereas a more complex tic might be like saying a phrase or having like a series of motions. Tics can be exacerbated by specific scenarios. They can have triggers. So when I was younger, and to an extent today, I had a tic where if I saw like a keyboard on a laptop, I'd like smash it. But obviously it wouldn't be smashing any keyboards if there weren't any around.
Yeah.
So that was very much a situation-specific tic.
Right.
And obviously there's this common misconception that everyone with Tourette's swears.
I was going to mention that. That's definitely not the case.
No, not at all. So estimates put it around 10% of people who have coprolalia, which is what the swearing tic is called.
Right.
It may be slightly more and maybe slightly less, but obviously public views of Tourette's often are based off TV shows like South Park or the documentaries, which in some ways purposefully choose to push this very over-exaggerated view of Tourette's, because obviously that is some people's experience, but for the vast majority of people it's not. And I think that itself poses quite a barrier to acceptance when people find out you have Tourette's and maybe they don't believe you because you're not swearing, or they question you. And I think
there's really nothing wrong with you because you're not demonstrating. The language that they have a perception is the sort of common
output.
If you like.
Those are tics, and everyone with Tourette's has them, because that's obviously the main diagnostic criteria for Tourette's.
I'm surprised to hear that South Park and other programs are sort of pushing a more negative stereotype. Mm. Are there any programs you're aware of, just while we're talking about that, that have done the opposite, that have presented a more balanced view of what it involves? And
so I mentioned South Park. Theoretically, it's actually been taken as not a bad representation, because in the episode, one of the characters pretends to have Tourette's and starts swearing all the time. So that obviously pushes this awful perception. Mm-hmm. But because of it, he goes to like a support group for other kids with tics. And then I don't think any of them swear, and they all have, sort of various other tics. So that it was seen as something which could have gone terribly wrong, episode, but it didn't go as wrong as expected. But I'm not necessarily sure that the people watching it who didn't have Tourette's took that away from it. In terms of other shows with good representation, I'm sure there are some, but they've all sort of flown out of my mind now. I think the one thing that a lot of people like, but I really hate, is The Undateables, which seems to always have someone with Tourette's on, really patronising, and obviously tends to be quite a sensationalised view of it.
Have you ever had a particularly poor in-store reaction to Tourette's or when you've been ticking?
Kind of. So I suppose for me, what I find really difficult, is flying. Going to the airport is always a real hassle, because I'm there usually with my parents because I can't fly alone because of my Tourette's.
Yeah.
You get to the front desk where you've bought your ticket, you're checking in, and finding appropriate seats is a nightmare. So obviously a lot of airlines like to randomise people sitting places so that passengers pay extra to sit with their friends and family. But obviously sitting with people I know isn't really an optional thing for me. I actually need it. So that flying is a stressful experience. And the fact that I have to go through customer service, spend, sometimes half an hour more trying to explain to them, yes, I have a disability. No, I don't need your help taking me to the aeroplane. no, that doesn't mean I don't have a disability. I still have a disability.
Yeah.
Like one airline I think was particularly bad was Ryanair. I spent about 2 hours on various occasions on the phone with them trying to explain that, you know, they didn't have to restrict me from doing certain things. Yes, I could sit, you know, anywhere as long as I was seated next to my companion.
Mm-hmm.
But there was just no understanding of it. It's like you either have a disability where you literally need to be like lifted onto the plane, or you don't have a disability in their eyes.
Yeah, there's nothing else in between.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's fair to say historically they've not been noted for customer service. That's not been a focus, but it's become more of a focus in the last year, as I think they've realised that, you know, customer experience is as important as value and price. So you'd like to think they would do something about having a better... I mean, what would your advice be to an airline? What would your advice be to anyone, any business out there when it comes to, you know, what might they do to become more knowledgeable about your disability and how they might serve you more effectively?
So I think there's been a positive trend in society generally towards recognising invisible disabilities. I think the best way to go about it would be to integrate accessibility into the booking process in the first place, because I cannot tell you how stressful it is to have to book the ticket, to spend your money on the ticket, and then hope that afterwards they'll be able to do something for you about it, because... obviously I try calling in advance saying, if I were to book this ticket, would you be able to accommodate me? And they can't say anything. Oh, well, maybe it depends on the aircraft we're using. Mm-hmm. It depends how many people have booked seats and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
I know that on some US airlines, I think maybe not you, North American generally, Air Canada, if you're flying within North America, they actually provide an extra seat if you request it, if you have accessibility requirements.
All right, okay.
Which would obviously be great, but that's only for flights within North America.
Yeah, as opposed to long haul. Yeah.
So obviously, in an ideal world, that would be the case, that if you have a disability, if you can provide medical proof, they should really be...
more accommodating.
Accommodating that.
Yeah.
And yeah, as I said, bring it into the booking process. I think British Airways actually do this. You can sort out accessibility while you're booking, as opposed to having to call someone and wait, and maybe you can't understand what they're saying because the line's crackly.
Yeah.
And
well, that's very stressful, isn't it? Because you know, as a customer, you're not really in control of the situation.
Yeah.
So you're booking and you've obviously got all this angst and stress about whether they're going to be able to accommodate you, give you the extra space that you need, etc. I mean, so I suppose from a customer experience perspective, there are certain fundamental things that, you know, airline shops and other establishments could do. Do you also feel it's about training and staff knowledge? Is there a job there to be done?
I think so, completely. So, sorry to bring all the examples back to airports, but I know some airports have a system. They seem to have trained their staff well in terms of having a way you can denote you're disabled specifically in that context, so that the staff at the shops and at the security checkout know that. So it's like a wristband. They do it, I think, Stansted.
Right.
So obviously the staff are trained already to know that. It doesn't have to be a specific charity's sort of like symbol. It's context specific and they won't ask any questions and you're able to access sort of extra adjustments. I think maybe not obviously for high streets, but perhaps for shopping malls, that could be something they could go with. Maybe some of them have it already. I've not actually...
And is it just the fact that you're wearing the wristband?
Yeah, you've had to go to a desk. You've had to, you know, explain things there.
Yeah.
In a situation where you know people actually understand what's going on because they're at the desk, they've been trained to understand it.
Yeah.
And then the staff around would know, oh, that's the pink wristband. That means...
Got you.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't see why. I really don't see why that couldn't and shouldn't be applied really in all consumer-facing environments. Mm. I mean, I think at the end of the day, it's down to the consumer-facing business, whether that's a restaurant, whether it's an airline, whether it's a retailer, you know, a car dealer, whatever it happens to be, I think, to be able to identify, you know, different types of customers, and particularly where you've got an invisible disability, such as Tourette's. Then, you know, to your point, the fact that you were making earlier that you feel very uncomfortable when you have to talk about it, because that creates more anxiety, which exacerbates the ticking and everything else. You know, why shouldn't everybody be trained to know what, you know, if you're wearing a particular colour wristband, that they can then identify that you have that hidden disability and that they can, you know, they can serve you more effectively and more relevantly.
Yeah, no, that would be the ideal.
That would be the nirvana, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
But we should be moving towards that, really, in this day and age, shouldn't we? So I suppose that kind of ties in with the next question, which was really about, you know, should it be the company's responsibility to raise awareness and training, or do you think it's a wider community issue?
I think to some extent it's obviously a mix of the two. So obviously companies should be providing disability awareness training to their staff. But obviously the nature of disability is such that there isn't really like one specific type of disability. There's so many different needs. And I mean, even with stuff like Tourette's or autism or ADD, there are so many different needs even within those conditions. You could have, like, I have completely different needs to other people I know with Tourette's, despite the fact that we sort of fall under the same umbrella.
Yeah.
So obviously, to some extent, it's not so easy to just say
it's not one size fits all, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
I think, personally, what I found useful is I know I can't rely on, and it's maybe quite cynical, but I know I can't rely on other people to just know what's up with it. Which is why I've sort of taken it upon myself to advocate in a way. So I've written some articles online.
Great.
I've taken to sharing a Facebook post with the details of my Tourette's so that when I meet new people, it's sort of just out there.
Yep. Do you know off the top of your head the URL for that, or the, or where on Facebook we could find that? Or anything else that you've written?
I've written about it in a few places. There's a Guardian student blog where I wrote about my experiences as a student with Tourette syndrome.
Yep.
There's a piece
so
on
that's
the tab
under your,
as
that's
well.
Under your own name.
Under my name, yeah.
Okay, which is Serena Bhandari, Bhandari. So if you want to know more about Serena and Tourette's and her thoughts on that, then you can certainly find that there. Please carry on.
Go read.
Absolutely.
So I found that the most effective way to get people to know about Tourette's is for me and other people with Tourette's to speak out and make people aware. And actually, when I was at school, I did an EPQ, which is an extended project qualification. I decided to make a documentary about Tourette's. And in my preliminary research, I sort of reached out and I realised actually a lot of people have, like, know people with Tourette's, like, sort of in the periphery. They may not know them, like, very well, but they know of someone with Tourette's. So I was just thinking, like, if everyone with Tourette's could get that, I guess, like, bravery or, like, the confidence to step up and you know, just even just like as a one-off, be like, yeah, I have Tourette's, this is what it's like. I think the whole world would be a bit more knowledgeable, and that would go a long way to helping sort of the general public know about it. And you know, what I found, I didn't really talk about it much till I was 16 or 17. And then when I started talking about it, suddenly I found that my friends and family were a lot more knowledgeable, and they felt more open to asking me questions about it. And now I feel like confident that if the vast majority of my friends heard something which was sort of untrue about Tourette's, they would be able to go there and say, actually, that's not necessarily true. There is so much more to it than that. And I think, so yeah, in some respect, you said the wider community. I think it sort of stems from people who have that personal experience feeling like they can talk out so that other people are educated. And yeah, I guess overall, society becomes more knowledgeable.
Indeed.
And obviously, I think the same applies to other disabilities and invisible conditions.
Actually, on that note, I know Saskia was going to talk about that, and she certainly feels there needs to be more training for customer-facing staff, really to help them better understand the needs of people with various disabilities, ranging from visible to non-visible, to ensure that they can genuinely add help and support when those customers are in their stores or restaurants. Tell me, if I were serving you right now behind the counter of a store, what would you like me to know about you, and what could I do to give you a great customer experience?
So I guess if I was shopping right now, I suppose I'd want the person behind the desk to just to ignore my tics, to treat me like any other customer.
Yeah.
If I were to ask, I suppose it would be more relevant in restaurants where obviously there's a bit more interaction between the staff and the customer. If I ask for adjustments, to obviously, you know, I guess trust that I know what I need as a disabled person, not to unreasonably question, not to distrust immediately, because obviously it's quite a stressful experience getting up that courage to even ask for it in the first place.
Sure. I think it's understanding, isn't it?
Yeah.
And being more, being less condescending and more inclusive.
Completely.
At the end of the day.
Also, just knowing that I'm a customer just like anyone else. I've come here to buy whatever I want to buy. It doesn't matter none of that other stuff matters. You like this, totally. At the end of the day, it should be, you know, you wouldn't want to disrupt any other customer. So why should you feel like it's okay to do that to a disabled customer?
Couldn't agree more. That's all we've got time for, folks. Thank you very much for listening to Consumer Focus with me, Martin Newman, and my wonderful guest, Serena Bhandari. Serena, thank you for your time and your input today. I hope you've enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was great. Thank you.
Thanks for coming along and sharing all your insight into Tourette's. I hope you will join me next time, folks, to discuss the latest in consumer concerns. Thank you very much.